Hey, Kitty's Ace Man here. We got a brand new podcast. It's called CarCast. If you want to check it out, go to iTunes, find CarCast, and hit subscribe. Now enjoy your podcast. Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Welcome to the podcast. It's my son, by the way. The Crystal Method is here. Ken Jordan and Scott Kirkland. Good to see you guys.
How you doing, Adam?
Oh, we go way back. Hey, Sonny. You know, here's the thing I've learned from reading the message board. I think you're cute, but everyone else hates you. And I think that's a message for all parents, you know what I mean? And all owners of small dogs, you know? You're really the only one that likes that creature. Everyone else finds it annoying and possibly disruptive. So, Sonny, you have two choices. You can either be quiet, or I'm going to have to move you into the room with Uncle Donnie, who's only 4 inches taller than you. But he does outweigh him by 12 pounds. All right, let's talk a little Crystal Method. First, how long have we known each other? 10 years plus? At least,
yeah, more than 10.
Guys, started when you came out here from Las Vegas doing Loveline. Let's see, for a while lived in La Crescenta.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Had a house that had a bomb shelter in the front yard.
Yeah.
You guys used to record in there, or am I making that up?
Well, that's our studio was at that house.
Uh-huh.
We called the studio the bomb shelter, but it was really in the garage.
Right. And now everyone living out here in Los Angeles or back in Vegas?
Yeah, Los Angeles, yeah. I'm over in Glendale and Ken's out in Encino.
Vegas seems like a surreal place to grow up. I mean, yeah. Jimmy kind of grew up in Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, going to the Caesar's Buffet on a Friday night with your family, running into, you know, Siegfried and or Roy at the local gym, just spending hours on end in the sauna. Sonny, I'm booting you out of here if you don't be quiet. Hey, was growing up in Vegas like?
Well, when you're a kid, our parents didn't work in the hotel industry or casinos. So when you're a kid, you don't know any better. You don't have anything to compare it to. So we just thought all 7-Elevens had slot machines, you know?
Right. Ken, what do your folks do in Vegas? And your parents aren't in the Vegas
grocery
industry.
Grocery store business, yeah. Dad, union. My mom worked for the company.
How do they end up in Vegas?
I don't know. There's always been lots of jobs available in Vegas. So
right.
Not anymore, yeah. My parents moved from Central Coast, which where they're back now, living and retired. But they moved there, I think, because it was growing and there were lots of jobs.
So they moved there and they do the grocery business.
Yeah.
And Scott?
My grandfather, I was born out here out in Artesia, so my grandfather was going out to Vegas because he knew someone that was working at Worthen Buick, one of the big dealerships there at the time, and so my parents were probably. I think my dad was 16 when I was born. My mom was 15. Not a lot of choice going with. You got to go with grandpa. So,
sure.
So we all came out, and my dad went to work right away, working selling used cars, and my mom found a job in the grocery business. That's how Ken and I met, because eventually I got one of those. Both of us got one of these cushy jobs. At the grocery store, so you know we didn't have to do the. You did a bag boy. You were a bag boy, right?
When I was like 14. Yeah.
Oh, 14.
Yeah.
14.
I gotta say it's pathetic looking back on it, but grocery gig was the holy grail of stupid guys from the San Fernando Valley jobs, because when I graduated high school, it was 1982, and when you turn on the evening news, they'll say, highest unemployment rate since 1982. So I realized just how shitty it was. By the way, for a bunch of doofuses that weren't going to college and had parents that didn't give a shit, that was a horrible combination. So we all just got let out into the world. Mm-hmm. And the first thing we all did was go to the supermarkets because they had unions. And there was always one guy. It's like some guy named Craig who has an older brother who's been working at the Gelsons for 2.5 years. He's in the union. He's making $11.26 an hour. And we're like, holy shit. And then someone would do this one. He worked New Year's Eve. Are you sitting down? They paid double time. He made $23.19 an hour for 11 hours. And they'd be like, well, what's he doing now? He must have retired, right? Like, you don't keep working after that kind of haul, right? Like, it's like he robbed a Brinks truck or something. Like, 20. So he's been paying. So, okay. So hold on. He gets time and a half for the first 3 hours after 8 hours. And then after that, he gets double time. And we're like, holy shit. So we all went down and put in applications, but no one was hiring, and it was only fast food that was hiring.
There would always be those kids that they'd start out as box boys, and of course everybody at the stores would tell you, oh, Bob, supervisor, you know, he'd come in and give his little speech. He'd go, I started out just like you there, Randy. Right. You know, I was bagging groceries, you know, when I was 16, and Now
you know, I'm 51 and I'm making $28K a year. It's like, it's not that inspirational. But there is the thing I do like in a young man's life, in every shitty job where you think for a moment, oh yeah, one day I'm going to be running this Taco Bell. And like, I remember having that at McDonald's. I worked at McDonald's and my manager was named Ken. And he used to yell at me, time to lean, time to clean, which is like, come on, dick. $2.10 an hour, and he was my ass. And I'm working the grill. They wouldn't let me work the counter. I had to work the grill, and I'd also have to do a sweep and a mop of the dining area, which was horrible because I was doing it during the summer, and my friends would come home from the beach. And they all be eating at the Studio City McDonald's, and I'd be there in the brown.
And the
pee,
floor,
you know?
I don't know what they put. They put the lacquer or some sort of substance they put on the floor to keep it shiny or keep it clean. It makes everything stick to it even more.
And also, it was a very weird combination because they said no rubber-soled shoes. They don't want you wearing tennis shoes or Vans. Leather-soled shoes. This is 1979, 1980. The only dress shoes I had, or so they wanted you to wear like suit shoes for $2.10 an hour wearing a McDonald's outfit, but wearing a paper hat and wingtip shoes. Like, what the fuck? Are you a gangster or are you flipping burgers? So, I only pair of shoes I had was my ninth grade graduation shoes, but it was a year and a half later. My foot had grown a size and a half. And they didn't really fit, but I'd stuff my feet into these leather-soled, just like wingtip shoes, and I'd be there mopping the floor, but then sliding all over the place because the floor would be wet. But I remember thinking, like I was working, I lasted about 3 months, but I remember thinking, like, when I was getting the speech from Ken about what it takes to really work the grill, and then he'd point out one of the other guys that you worship, like, you see, Trent O'Doul over there? 6 years he's got behind the grill. He knows when a burger needs to be seared instinctively. You understand? He's that in tune with the burger. And you know what he's making there? He's making $3.65 an hour right now, okay? He's looking at a used TR7, okay? All right? He hasn't squeezed the trigger on it yet, and you're just thinking, wow, man, 3 years from now,
I had a used
man,
TR7.
People will be talking to me. He'll be, when the rookies are coming in, I'll be the guy behind the grill who's looking, who's eyeballing the TR7 because I'm making $3.75 an hour. Like, you do have that one moment, then the beautiful thing about being a human being is, like, then two hours into the game, it's like, oh, fuck this. I'm taking a piss in the freezer. Get the fuck out of here. But there's that moment where you go, I'm going to be the best fill-in-the-blank shitty job ever. And this Dick Ken's going to be talking about me one day like I'm Vince Lombardi.
Yeah, I got all my burger flipping out of the way at school. I don't know if you did. Your high school used to have, I don't know, they used to.
We boiled
bring the
our
kids,
burgers.
They used
but,
to, the
yeah.
kids. The kids would be.
Oh, really? They got
they would,
you.
They would have a certain. You'd have if, like if you got certain grades or something, you could go in and you would during you would get a different lunch hour. Or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you'd go in and you'd be the ones taking the orders and working back there. And then I remember.
Well, that's a good thing.
Well, it was. He made like a dollar.
He made a dollar an hour.
He made some money or whatever.
Yeah, I think if you worked at like the snack shack.
It wasn't a good thing. I'm saying I got all that. Soon, you know, I was back there. I thought it was going to be fun because I thought, okay, I'll make some money. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing really going on at school. Maybe it was junior high. I think it was junior high. And so I just remember all the people that were back there. There's one day I had this moment when I was sitting back there when I was looking around the room at all the 10 or 15 people I was working with. Mm-hmm. And none of them, they were all the complete goofball nerds. It was just not a fun moment. That's when I realized I just need to get out of this game.
Well, how did you guys then hook up? You hooked up at the supermarket?
Yeah. Actually, yeah. We didn't know each other and... We were both sort of working on music separately.
Just now, Ken, it's your folks' supermarket. They're
no, actually, Scott's mom was the store manager there. Mm-hmm. My dad was the union guy. My mom worked for the company, but in the main office somewhere. But anyway, Scott came in with a drum machine.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, hey, who's this kid with a drum machine? You know, so we just started talking and.
Did they need the drum machine at work? Did it have something to do with produce?
No,
I feel like I'm going to tell you to leave that at home. And my manager, if I'd showed up with a drum machine, would have told me to take it right back out to the car.
Well, I did. I was working in the video store camera department. You know, one of those things at the front. You buy a Snickers and drop your film off.
Oh, right.
If there's time to rent movies, there's time to program beats. Right?
Yeah. So on my break, I took this drum machine down to down into the break room and was just sitting there, and I didn't know how to use it because I just picked it up. Literally just picked it up. I'd somehow found its way into my jacket and at the local store where
that
I used to.
It's a pretty big item to steal.
Well, it's
I could see like a guitar pick or two. But the machine seems like a pretty large item to
rip off. I had given these fine people, or my mom had given these fine people at this place like $25 a week for like 9 months of guitar lessons from Mark Slaughter. Mm-hmm. So, and after a while, my mom.
Do I know him? Is he in the band Slaughter?
Yeah, he lived up all night, sleep all day. That's what he was before he went and joined Vinnie Vincent's Invasion.
You got guitar lessons from the Slaughter guy?
Yes, and he would have been a really great guitar teacher if I would have done more than just wanting to learn the latest riffs from Crew or AC/DC.
Right.
He was sitting there trying to teach me theory and teach me, you know, you gotta work on your scales, and I'd be like, oh no, man, what's that looks to kill, riff? And then I'd go home. And so after a while, my mom started to realize that the money wasn't being used properly and not a lot of return. And I started to feel the same way. So I figured, well, you know, what's a little drum machine here, there? I'll pay him back
eventually.
Took
the drum machine with you. But in your mind, you'd paid in enough. It's sort of like when you take your car to the mechanic. And they just rape you. You know, they say they're just going to do a quick brake job, change the pads, but they turn the rotors and they repack the bearings and do a bunch of shit, and it's like $1,300. And then you realize the guy left a tool in your car, and you think for a second, I should bring this back. And then you think, fuck him. I just paid him $1,300. I got $9 worth of crescent wrench in my driver's side floor, so be it.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's what it was for you.
Something like that, yeah. So anyways, I brought it in one day, and we were he had been working with this guy on music, and I had written some stuff on the guitar and some beats, and just went over to his house and just started working together at that point.
So did you know what kind of music you wanted to do at the time?
No. Well, we had somewhat of an idea, but it took us a few years to actually figure out what exactly we wanted to do and what we were doing. Because we first started out just producing for like singers and like rappers and stuff, like producing the tracks. Like we were going to be a production team, but then
kind of trying to and working our production around that particular talents or skills of that singer or rapper.
Mm-hmm.
So what we ended up doing was making music as shitty as the singer or rapper we were working with,
right.
it was we just continue to feel wow, this is really not sounding good, and the rapper's no good, and we don't like this whole idea.
And what year is this? Because everyone's thinks they can rap 89, at this point, right?
89, 90.
Yeah. So then Ken moved to L.A. to he got a job with a producer out here and working as an engineer. And then about 9 months later, I followed him up.
And the Crystal Method is named after a chick named Crystal. That you guys had some sort of something to do with. Oh, went out with her, broke up with her, got her to get to go back out with her by doing a certain technique.
Something that she was a friend of Ken's that they were sort of on and off dating, and just the rapper, this rapper we were working with, who was a really, really bad rapper, his one inspirational moment was referencing how we were going to be going out to this rave that night. We said, oh, you know, Crystal's going to take us. And he said, oh, the Crystal Method. And he just said that out loud. And we were like, wow, that sounds like a really cool. And it was, so we wrote it on the chalkboard of band ideas.
It's funny that, even a broke rapper is right twice a day, which is I've heard people that not have never had a good idea in their whole life will still once in a while spit out words in a combination that actually works, except for they never know it. So you got to do that like a movie. What'd you just say?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's always condescending when you're surprised that you do that. Did you just think of that? Thought of that? Is that yours?
It's exactly the same thing that happened. What did you see? I mean, we had to have him repeat it. He's like, oh, the Crystal. I was like, yeah, we're.
That's
you know.
Like one of my teachers used to turn in a paper that got like a C minus. They'd be like, did someone help you with this? Who helped you with this? Thanks. it's the best and worst thing you can hear from a teacher. It means, A, you did, you know, they call you and they, I want to talk about your book report. You're like, yeah, and they go, did somebody help you with this? It's like, A, you go, all right, well, I got an A.
It's good.
But B, she thinks I'm a retard from all, based on all the other work I've handed in, or in my case, not handed in. My argument was, how do you know I'm stupid? I've never handed anything in. You don't know if I can spell or not. I've never actually handed anything in. So you guys, now this is out of high school, right?
Yeah.
But you guys met working, and were you still in high school at this time?
I was just out of high school, and Ken, right about this time, was firing Jimmy Kimmel from KUNV.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You're at the radio station.
Yeah.
And Kimmel was once again getting fired. What did he do? Because I, you know, he's a talented guy. He's a funny guy, and yet he's been shit canned from every radio job he's ever had.
I didn't know Jimmy. I don't think I ever listened to him on the air at
Ken
all.
Ken was kind of, you know.
But I heard he had brought this guy on from another station who I hated, and that was it.
So what was your job that you were above Jimmy Kimmel at the radio station?
I was, at any given time for about 2 years, I was music director, program director, and general manager.
Kevin Weatherly.
You're Kevin Weatherly from K-Rock. And what kind of, and then what was the format of the station?
It was like a K-Rock for Vegas. Mm-hmm. From like 6 p.m. to like 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. But then there was like urban morning, and mm-hmm. then there was like public service stuff, you know, midday till 6, mm-hmm. something like that.
And so now you're being exposed to all this music, and at a certain point you decide to come out to L.A. because you get a gig doing producing for who?
Tony Berg. He's a... produce like rock music producer
and
guy.
Scott follows you, mm-hmm. and you guys decide to just start doing your own thing. And
well, then the whole
brothers.
Rave scene started to happen. We started going to these raves, and then it was then we kind of we were music started sounding a little more like that. The music we were making,
right?
And then on top of that, we realized the tracks we were making could be released on their own and without the singer rapper,
right?
And then so. All of a sudden, it was more of a band than a production team.
The music that you were doing didn't really exist too long before you were doing it, right?
Right.
How much of the stuff you do is for your album and how much of it is for like soundtracks and X Games and that kind of stuff? Because you do a kind of music that is sort of conducive to being behind guys doing flips on motorcycles and guys getting in car chase scenes through Tokyo while they're drifting and stuff like that.
Yeah, we actually the only thing that we've done specifically for movies, we scored this movie called London, which is an independent movie with Jessica Biel that came out. Jason Statham came out a couple of years ago. But video games? But what I was going to say is that we just make our goal is just to make an album, and then people sort of gravitate towards that and find something on there that does work in those different, the different environments, whether it's a video game or... We have done something exclusively for a video game. It was Matrix...
The military thing. What was that?
Oh, and there's this game that's coming out that's called MAG, if that's still the title, at the end of 2009. It's part of Sony's big release for Christmas. It was basically like 256 players at one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like you start out. I mean, I think people are going to be lost forever. Say goodbye to the family.
Right.
So because you could start out in any sort of number of areas. You could be a grunt, tank cleaner, or you could be a part of the airborne division, and you just continue to go. Someone could be like in Germany, flying down, paratrooping in, and you're talking to him. Oh, this is going to be, and then that guy gets shot, killed, and then he's out.
He's out. But if you stay in, this could
you can make your work your way up to like general, and you're sort of controlling the whole. I mean, but it's a really, really amazing looking game, and the fact that they are able to work this technology where, 256 people can be playing the same game at the same time around the world is pretty crazy.
I think you can start as a bag boy at the commissary.
Don, you have a Skype call for us, by the way?
Yeah, we do. We got
put your headphones on there, kiddies. Let's give this a shot.
We got John on the line. He's got a question for Crystal Method and one for you, Adam.
Oh, hey, John, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering, how was the recording with Mattis Yahoo?
Mattis was great. He was, we met him at this festival in Canada. What was that festival? Pemberton Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Big 3-day festival, and his tour manager came by early in the day to our trailer and asked if we'd be interested in him coming up on stage during our set. And we said sure, and he came by, talked to Scott, got it all worked out, and came on stage to a track we have off our first album called High Roller, and just really did this amazing performance, just completely...
He's the Hasidic Jewish rapper.
Yeah. And just freestyled this performance, went so well. We talked about, doing something in the future. So then we were working on the new album, and we sent him a couple of tracks. Or did we just send him one? It's Dust, yeah. We sent him a track, and he recorded the vocals in New York, and... the track is Drowning in the Now. There's a cool video to it.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
He lives in a kibbutz in Manhattan. Where is he? Is he in New York?
He lives in...
in Brooklyn?
Brooklyn or what's that other... I think it's Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. He's really, really down to earth, really just a really nice guy, just very professional, just, came in and...
And really tall.
Really tall.
Tall.
Yeah. Well, it's true, but the hat adds 9 inches. I mean, I know how to see them roll. Hey, did you have a second question for me?
Yeah, so I read that Jimmy Kimmel is narcoleptic. I am, too, and I'm wondering, because when I go out drinking, I'm usually the first one out. Did that seem to be the same case with Jimmy?
Jimmy, well, let's see. One time we went to the Aspen Comedy Festival, and he'd started drinking... And I got on an elevator with a bunch of high-level executives, and he vomited all over the place because of the altitude. I think he's one of these guys. Like, there's certain guys who, when they're drunk, they seem really drunk, and when they're high, they seem really high. Like, they're guys who get high, and you can't tell they're high, mm-hmm. And then they're guys who get high, and you're like, dude, look at you. You are so high. You know, so there are guys that look really high and look really drunk, and even some guys who look really horny. Ken's one of those guys, actually. You can tell when Ken's horny. Without even looking at his junk. Maybe I can just read him because I've known him for a while. But the point is I wouldn't call him a lightweight, but I could tell if he was drunk. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas, actually, I thought I was a heavyweight, really, until the incident last football season when Tom Cruise came over to Jimmy's house. And Tom Cruise came to Jimmy's house with his mom, brought cupcakes, because he knows the NFL crowd, you know, he knows. Oh, we were like, oh, fuck, finally. We, you know, had up to here with the beer and the hot wings. Where's finally some cup, something with sprinkles on it? Yeah. They brought cupcakes. So, really, what?
Tom Cruise drunk you into the table?
No, Tom Cruise. No, Tom Cruise evidently does not drink. But I didn't realize. He showed up with like 5 minutes left to go in the late game.
Right.
And I had been drinking almost the entire two games that went on. You know, I'd been drinking for like 6 hours. And when Tom Cruise showed up, I was loaded. But I did that thing where I was like, hey, man, I know I'm loaded. And I know that's Tom Cruise, but I'm going to make an ass of myself. And then 5 minutes later, we were all in his living room. And Tom Cruise was throwing me the football. And I was doing my touchdown dance where I shit it out. It's an awesome thing. I'll do it for you guys. I'll try to describe it as best I can. It's my touchdown dance, and I say it would be the greatest day in NFL history if a guy, after he scored, it's a move. You take the ball,
yeah,
and you just hold it right behind your back, right, yeah, in the small of your back, and then you squat like you're sitting on the toilet. Not like you're out in the woods. You just do it like you're sitting on the toilet, and then you read the sports page. Like you pretend to look at the newspaper, and then at a certain point, you put your head up, and you go, and you drop the ball out, and then you get back to reading the newspaper.
That would be legal, right? There's no prop involved?
Well, the football, you can't
use. Oh, you can't use the ball anymore.
You can't use
it. Look, you'd get 15 yards and probably a fine, but you'd be in the front of every sports section. You'd be talking about it. Yeah,
if you did it right, maybe without the newspaper, though, you could do it so quick that the referees wouldn't know what happened, right? Just kind of do the crouch, and then let it drop, you know?
The point is you could streak with a bathrobe on, too, and no one would know, but that's not the point, Ken.
Okay.
The point is for people to know.
Yes.
So Tom was up. It's a sunken living room. Him and his mom were up three stairs high. I was down at the bottom part. Everyone had entered. He threw me the pass. I did my little celebration. Then I got down, and I read my newspaper and squatted the ball out. I think it would be the greatest day in sports if someone would shit that ball out.
And what was Tom's reaction to that?
I was so drunk, I really don't remember. But more people sort of told me about it.
Oh, okay.
And then I realized, well, I guess you do act differently when you're drunk.
Slightly.
Yeah. But I think the narcolepsy probably brings that out a little bit. I don't know. Do you guys have any? You guys have any sleep disorders or anything?
Scott used to have this brilliant plan regarding narcolepsy.
It was when you're going through a rough relationship where the phone's always ringing or there's something that you just don't want to have the constant sort of relationship. You just like the every once in a while. Mm-hmm. So this is
honey, what are you doing? Working.
What are you doing? Oh, well, how are you working? So why weren't you here? You told me you were going to be here 4 hours ago. So I thought, I think the next girlfriend, I'm going to tell her that I have narcolepsy. And then it's
first
just,
thing.
And then and then there'll be a little pity. And I go, but I'm on medication. It's all controlled.
Right.
But then there'll be that time when I'm 4 hours late. And I say, oh, baby, I'm sorry. I fell asleep.
That's a good idea. I've done the thing. I've always said this, but I've never had the guts to do it. But I think when you start a new job, now, if you do podcasting or you make rave music, you don't really need to do this. But if you get just a regular gig at some law firm or something like that, the first thing you should do is go into your boss's office and explain, you have a special needs child. And you just, you do that thing where you go, you know, Brent is a hero. He's got more, and you do that thing where you have to just stop. He's got more.
Are you really selling? It looks like you're about to.
He's got more courage. He's a hero. Okay, I'm sorry. It's just anyway. Let's get back to work. You know, let's get back to work.
Are there awards for podcasting? I can act.
So you do that thing where you Brent. Brent. I can't talk about Brent. You just go. But that's the point. You have to stop yourself. You can't get into details.
Yeah.
You know, and he starts something with spina something or something. But you know, he was born with it. But he's a hero. Mm-hmm. He's a hero. And so then you do that thing, and then, you know, I just want to get back to work. And, of course, the guy's like, oh, yeah, listen, of course, anything. And then he'll probably bring up some story where he'll go, my sister has a son who's special. And he's like, okay, you know what I'm talking about. And then at a certain point, you know, when you just want to go fishing or you just feel like getting the fuck out of there, you do that tap on the door. You do it the one with the back of your knuckle. That means you need to talk, you know, the back knuckle tap. Hey, Bob, you have something? Yeah. Brent's having a kind of a bad day, and he just gave it. Oh, go ahead, get out, take the rest of the whatever you need. Get out. There's no boss is gonna go. What do you mean a bad day? What do you do? Shit himself again? Don't you have help? Like you just do the why. I just got a call from Tammy. She said Brent's not having a good day. I really need to. And then you could get out of work 3 days a week for the rest of your fucking, no one would ever say, I want to see this retarded kid. How retarded is he? I'm sending a scientist over to the house with a short list of tests that I want to run him through just to see what grade level he's at mentally. You know what I mean? And you just do that thing every once in a while where he's your hero. And he doesn't have to show up for company picnics or anything because he's, you know, he's not good with sunlight, you know, or whatever. And that's it.
It seems like you have some sort of fairly sort of movie here. So you start this out.
Right.
And then there's the one day where you have to, you know, maybe it's, you know, you
I have to rent a retarded
kid. Yes, and then you ended up, because you're pretty crass, you know, don't,
right.
you, and then all of a sudden you get in there and you just find the right one that sinks your heart. And
but
you
end up falling in love with the kid.
And then you end up like, yeah, you know, sort of, you end up, you know, taking him back to the house and you find out all of his, you know, he's not such a bad kid. Maybe then grows up to be Rain Man or something and makes you a bunch of money or something.
That's a little more Wayne's Brothers. I think that is fairly, but.
Hey, that's good stuff.
I'm just saying.
Go ahead, nice car, so.
If you get a new, hey man, the check's all clear. If you get a girlfriend, you start with the narcolepsy. Uh-huh. And if you get a job, you start, or you could combine them. You can tell your boss you're narcoleptic and you have a special needs child who's also narcoleptic. Like, I mean, why not just pile it all on? You could get the hell out of work all the time. And eventually, once the guy got the routine, you just do that back thing on the door. He'd be on the phone. You'd come walking in with that very sober look on your face, and he'd just give you the wave. Like, go on, get out of here. Get out of here. Get out of here. Whereas if you announce you're single and free as a jaybird, you're going to get all the weekend shifts. Yeah. You're going to get the OT. Everyone wants to know where you're going. Like people use their kids. I haven't been able to use my kids that way yet. But I mean, like the single guys, like over at Kimmel's, when I was a writer over on his show, if there was a weekend gig, like someone's got to go with Uncle Frank to the meatball festival in Conejo and stand there for 8 hours with him, and everyone's like, oh, fuck, I don't want to go. If you had kids, you're out. You're off that list. Like, hey, man, I haven't seen my daughter in two, you know, we haven't, we planned, she's got a soccer. But the single dudes, get in the bus with Uncle Frank. You're actually kind of punished at work for not having kids.
Yep.
Yeah, I never really thought. But again, I think about the special needs. Part, you guys, you know, and God forbid you end up back at the market. I'm not saying you're gonna, but it's a tough business. And, you know, if you do, you just start off with that. And I know you'd probably be telling one of your parents, as him running the place, but still try to keep a straight face. Now, are we going to, I think we're going to hear something off the new album, are we? Yeah, Donnie? You want to try some of that? Hmm? New album, by the way, Divided by Night. The Crystal Method. Oh, there we are. Coming through my headphones as we speak.
Still matters, yeah, new track.
First, and then he just sort of feels it.
Yeah, this pretty much that's how most of the tracks develop. You know, we're just working on the track, and then get to the point where you know we hear something, whether vocal, female vocal, guitar, whatever, and then we reach out to someone. This track could have been an instrumental. You know, it was probably set to be an instrumental, but there was something about it that fit his. We thought that fit his style because mm-hmm. he was doing this sort of Middle Eastern chant mm-hmm. thing when he came up on stage with us and, at that festival. So it just has a real, you know, just beautiful quality to it. So.
Do you ever have a situation where you're writing a song and the song in your mind's eyes, like supposed to be dark and supposed to be, I don't know, angry or supposed to be mysterious or whatever, and then you get someone like Modest Mahu. I can't think of it. Modest Yahoo. He gets up there and he starts singing about puppy dogs. And you're like, hey, wait a minute. But maybe it sounds good anyway, but in your mind it was something different. It started off with something different.
Well, the last song on the album is a track called Falling Hard. And we, you know, it's this beautiful song, but it's dark and we kind of wanted dark lyrics to go with it, and this girl Miko who sang the vocal on it, she wrote basically, "I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you," you know. Right. And we were, and it turned out it was something she was writing from personal experience, and we were desperately trying to get her to change it up to say "fuck you."
Right.
Like about every third time or something, right, at the end, you know.
I mean, it was a breakup song. So she was saying that the basically that this is, you know, the relationship is over, and it's that.
But
you know,
do you write it as a breakup song?
No. It just had the. It's, you know, it's the key that it's in the,
right,
the notes that they, you know, they tend to lead it in a certain direction. But I mean, it was still, I mean, her voice was great. And the thing about Miko is that, you know, since she writes from a personal place, that really comes out in her voice, and the quality of her voice has a real, you know, natural, you know, empathy, has real, you know, emotion to it. So, you know, and so you can't, so be like,
you can't tell her not.
We tried to just. what if we just made this like a, you know, with like an animal?
How's that work? Like, Ken, go tell her to do something.
Well, we got her to record a couple of fuck yous, but she wouldn't allow. You have to give the co-writer some.
Well, not
some veto power,
I
you
mean,
know?
In the end, I mean, we would have, I mean, we if we didn't like it a lot, we wouldn't
right.
love it, we would have, we, you know, we would have...
Yeah, in the end, we always kind of write dark, so right. there's happiness is a good contrast to our
right.
to our music.
Well, the name of the album is ironically Divided by Night. It is out as we speak. The Crystal Method is coming to a town near you. But where do we go to find what town you're coming to?
MySpace is generally the most up-to-date. We have our website, thecrystalmethod.com, but MySpace.com/thecrystalmethod It's really up to date.
And also, I think it's August 21st. For a week in August, ESPN is bringing X Games 3D motion picture to theaters, 1,000 theaters across the country, and our music is pretty predominantly the score for that. So it'll be, just like you said, there'll be...
You shouldn't hear that, Aaron.
It'll be...
X Games 3D?
I'll be flying overhead.
So the guy... You know, doing the crazy backflip on his on his bike will be coming at you, and you're hear our music underneath it. So
bitching. All right, so that's coming out on the 21st of August.
August.
Oh, you look for it.
Yeah, X Games is going on now.
Right. Scott, Ken, always a delight.
Always good fun. See you.
Good to see you again, Adam.
Good time. So until next time, this is Adam Kroll for Scott and Ken at the Crystal Method. My good buddy the Weeze saying, mahalo.
Follow Adam Carolla on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Reach him via Skype at Adam Podcast or through the mail at Adam Carolla Podcast, 10061 Riverside Drive, number 276, Toluca Lake, California, 91602.
Like the missus, the kiss blissed out when you're dancing in the darkness. It's the choir shout, what the deal, hold back, flip crystal tracks, the methods relax, the power, we'll lay back.